Hey there. Help you?
What state is this?
Sorry.
You don't understand the question?
Oh, no, I didn't. Most people know where they are.
Why ain't most people?
You're in the glorious state of Arkansas, sweetheart.
How'd you know they was lying?
Well, this ain't Arkansas, so everyone is lying.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Sun Beacon, sponsored by Warby Parker. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Sonny Bunch and Jonathan V. Last. Just a reminder, the Sun Beacon is available on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Look at our podcasts and search for Sun Beacon. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe, like you have anything else better to do. Tell your friends and leave a review. Gentlemen, how are we? I was just about to go to the usual spiel, and then all of a sudden I see Sonny there wearing his hoodie.
Darth Sidious.
I made this comment earlier, Sonny. You remind me of the guy from House of Cards who was like the Julian Assange Darknet character. I forgot who played him.
No, you with your Jimmy Simpson fixation.
Oh, it was Jimmy Simpson who played him. That's right. Sonny, how are things in Texas? I can't imagine that it's worse than it is here. I imagine they're much more laid back and everybody's still hanging out together.
I went to the grocery store today and I bought $450 worth of groceries, which is not only more than any other trip to the grocery store that I've ever made. It's more than any two trips combined. Like, I don't think I've ever, with the possible exception of, you know, when I was buying like beer for a party or something, I don't think there's any chance I have ever spent $450 on two trips to the grocery store.
And it was $450 just in toilet paper? Is that what it was?
Toilet paper and aspirin and children's Tylenol.
Did you go over the limits?
No. Well, so they actually did not have any toilet paper. They did not have any paper towels. So I couldn't get any of those. But I did get a lot of like aspirins and Dayquils and NyQuils and that sort of stuff. We're pretty well stocked here at this point. Plus also just like literally probably 2.5 weeks of food. If we need to, stop.
That's about the amount that you're supposed to get is about 2 weeks worth, I think.
Yeah. We're pretty well set here. Assuming the water stays on and the power stays on, fingers crossed.
Yeah. This is a good time of year for that. This is not the winter time.
So we should be, I'm part of the problem is what it comes down to. I'm part of the problem. Not so much because of the toilet paper, but only because I couldn't buy 10 packs of it. I totally would have.
You know, I feel like you guys made fun of me when last we were together.
I don't even remember when that was.
Things like, hey, everybody should have a lot of supplies and we're going to close the movie theaters.
I don't know what day it is today. I don't know what day
What's
the
happening?
Last time
happening
we
already.
Was. I literally was trying to remember if we did an episode last week and I couldn't because I couldn't remember what week it was.
It is
we
all lived, a blur.
Time isn't a flat circle so much as time is just it's like a paint spill. It's like, you know, when you pour all the paint together and it all kind of swirls together and none of the colors have like, they haven't merged into that weird, gross brown, but they're still like all kind of separate. That's what the day feels like. I don't know. It's Friday. Is it maybe all Monday? Right.
Look, we
it's
don't
also,
do politics.
It's 2024, by the way. I don't know if you know that.
Although this show is going to be full of politics. There's no way to avoid it.
Oh,
but I will just say that for the last 12 months, I've been telling anybody who would listen, Joe Biden is going to be the Democratic nominee. And
there was a moment where you thought Bernie
January,
Sanders. I remember you were depressed.
Yeah, you were definitely depressed.
Bernie Sanders
and also,
is going to be the nominee.
Also, Joe Biden's not going to be the nominee because Joe Biden has the coronavirus, and that's why we haven't seen him, because he's on a ventilator right now.
Ventilator. He's got the much coveted ventilator.
And I've been saying for a long time, like, hey, this stuff is really bad. Pandemic. It's going to be bad.
Pandemic.
And here we are.
Pandemic.
Here we are.
That's right. So what are we talking about, JVL? What are you saying here? 18 months? That's your dream come true, isn't it? Social distancing has finally happened.
In a way it is.
But not the kind you want.
Yes. That's the problem, isn't it?
Social distancing from others.
It's
like, that's right. Like, I would like social distancing if it was just me and my Gumar, you know, that would be fine.
Yeah. Okay.
It's Yeah,
But we're so separated now. You know, she's in New York. You know, by Kumar. Okay, go ahead, JVL.
What does that mean? I'm sorry. What is that? Is that like Guma?
Yeah, no.
Kumar.
You know, after a while, in Jersey, we just throw the R on everything. Okay, so go ahead, please.
We're all drinking. All three of us.
I'm just having water. I had a hard. I hit it hard yesterday. I had my giant tall martini. Let's see here. I think it's what you call a cobbler, a Boston shaker is when it's two parts.
You went out drinking while confined to your home?
I went out drinking to my living room but we did it. We did a big happy hour with all of my Free Beacon colleagues, using Zoom.
Oh man.
And I had to drink because it was work.
Well, it's a happy
of
hour.
Of course, it's happy hour. Everybody had to drink. You were not allowed to be on. You're not allowed to be on the Okay, let's see. Eliana, of course, our editor in chief, Stephanie, Brent Scher, Aaron Harrison, Goldfarb, and me. So six of us. Oh, it was a big party. Nice. It was actually very fun. Goldfarb was doing you can do these special effects, you do the backdrop.
Yeah.
So it's like different backdrops. And his was of a Chinese meat market. And they're wearing masks.
Eating some bat and some pangolin.
I said, that is just sick.
Poor Mike. You know, we think we have it tough. He's quarantined with a newborn.
Yeah, he's got a...
Harrison, too. And the funny thing is, but Eliana's backdrop, she did the one where it's like palm trees. You're on a beach, you know? Mm. But and her fiance was sitting next to her. But it's like weird, because if you're not the actual focal point, of the camera, you start getting phased out, and he looked like the brother from Back to the Future in the photo.
I was gonna say, was he glitchy the way in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse?
Yes, kind of like he's fading out like in Back to the Future. It's like half of him is there, and is like
head. How much did you drink last night at your virtual happy hour that you had to drink for because of professional obligations?
Professional obligations. I filled that whole tall martini cobbler.
It's not a pitcher.
It is not a pitcher, but I tell you what, I got the spoon. The spoon with the spiral spoon, the bar spoon. It was so much fun.
Guys,
and,
can I just Can I just throw this out there? We're doing this over Zencaster, and this is a million times better. I hope everybody at home appreciates this.
Yeah, I know.
Squadcast, not Zencaster.
But we're using what's Squadcast? What's the?
It's what we're using. Squadcast. I turned on to by our buddy KSA, who killed her own podcast this week.
No,
in what sense?
Yeah, the pollsters. She killed it. She murdered it. Why? I think it got COVID-19. I think the podcast got COVID-19.
Well, that happened. That's going to happen.
But she said do Squadcast, and Zencaster is great, and in many ways is a great product. But what it doesn't do is video, and this way the three of us can see each other.
Oh, this is very nice.
Oh, you can't do it blind. It's too weird.
You can with two people. You can do it.
When you do interviews and stuff, when you don't see the other person, you really, you can't talk the way you would normally talk, where you could step over people's lines. You notice that. I mean, people just sit, wait for the question, done, and then you answer. Here, this is like a free for all. Like, it's like we're all in the same studio.
So, Vic, you're drinking water.
I'm drinking water right now, and I got done planking.
You're drinking a clear, odorless liquid.
Yes. Hmm? Yeah. That's right.
All right. The author of vodka is drinking water.
Probably water.
Definitely not.
And then water. Okay.
JVL, what are you drinking?
I'm on my second drink.
Ooh.
You're about to pass out. Don't pass out until we're done recording.
This is weird recording both from home and at night. This is our first after dark.
I was ready to say, I am not.
And this is this is the Kirkland brand Baileys, so the Costco knockoff Baileys mixed with club soda and the
club soda.
I don't understand this. This is the thing I didn't really understand.
You're doing it's my mother-in-law's like borderline. Drink. You're putting club soda and the Baileys mixed together?
This is my mother-in-law's drink.
I think
it's her mother's drink.
I think this is what
Irish ladies in North Jersey in 1920 drank.
I'll tell you what that is. Yeah, that's the alcoholic version of the egg cream. So like Sprite and vanilla ice cream.
So here's I'm going to steal two jokes here.
Ooh.
the first casualty in my life, in my little circle of COVID-19 was my keto diet. Because
I didn't even know you were on a keto diet.
It's only been like 2 years. Thanks, Vic.
Wait a minute.
I was like big and fat, and then
I knew you lost weight. I just thought you went without carbs. I thought you just went strictly meat.
Basically, So I went. I killed the carbs, and the carbs have won. It turns out, in a time of pandemic, avoiding carbs is essentially impossible.
I find myself eating less. It turns out my eating at restaurants was actually putting on. I was a lot more weight. Wow.
You're telling me that when you went to Fabio Tricciani's, whatever his restaurants are, when you went to all of his restaurants,
the carbonara,
you ate all the healthy fish that was drowned in olive oil.
I never ordered the pastas.
You're telling me that wasn't healthy? That wasn't
apparently
healthy
even if I was like, to limit
cheese
myself,
sauces,
even if I were to limit myself to like a small appetizer,
the sausages and the meatballs
and dessert.
I'm going to step on a scale and discover that I've put on the COVID-19.
Good. This should be the COVID-19. I'm writing that one down. You've just created a new podcast for us, JVL, avoiding the COVID-19, and it would just be health tips, just like 5 minute podcast where we do health tips. The three of us, the healthiest people that we know. I have to say, I actually have lost like 4 pounds since this started a week ago. Because I have transferred, I've transferred back to my working from home diet, which was bowl of Cheerios and a banana in the morning with coffee. For lunch, I just have 4 eggs and an apple. That's it. That's all I eat.
How do you the eggs? Hard boiled? Raw?
No. I do fried. But I use Pam. I use Pam. I don't use butter like some people probably would.
Butter, that's dairy, is good for you.
I just use Pam, the zero calorie Pam. Yeah. And then a reasonable dinner, like some salmon. The only problem with the reasonable dinner part is that they have not had any chicken at the Kroger. I keep spending hundreds of dollars at the Kroger on things, but they have no chicken, sadly.
There's a chicken shortage, strangely.
Chicken. Well, is it because they're baking a
platter of brownies every single night, and I'm eating to stay awake because I'm working till 2 and 3 in the morning, and also the world is collapsing around us, and we're heading into a second Great Depression. And so the requisite willpower to be like, no, I know the plate of brownies is right there next to it. And I'm just like, you know what? Fuck it. Let's just do this thing.
You're going to have to mark
Let's
that
just
one down.
Do this thing.
Mark it.
You know,
I will say that. I'm not a brownie person.
I don't do chocolates. Well, certain kind of brownies, but you know. The ones with nuts, the walnuts. That's a good thing for me. My big thing is savory. I'm very much into savory, the only sweet I really, really like is ice cream. That's it.
Well, and, speaking of which, this has been the one flaw in my eating at home plan is that now I find myself eating a bowl of ice cream every night. Just I eat a bowl of ice cream.
One of the terrible things is when this whole coronavirus thing started was Kate saying to me, I can no longer just go in randomly with spoon into various ice creams and just help myself.
If anybody in your house has coronavirus, we all have it. So you might as well just be like spitting in each other's faces all the time.
That's exactly right. I've been able to just, this is one of my pet peeves, of course, is as a lot of you know, is I hate waste. I hate wasting food. I hate throwing food away.
What did your parents say? Was it Ethiopia for you?
China? They always said, no, I don't know.
Every generation has a different people starving in China.
Now you should throw it away out of spite. Despite those Chinese,
that's true. Now that's
Chinese
a very good,
flu.
That's a very good
foreign
point.
Foreign virus.
That's right. The foreign virus. It drives me crazy to see that, and so it's one of my ticks. So what the great thing is, I've been able to go through the fridge and finding stuff that's on the verge of expiring or has actually expired, and I'm eating it. I found a yogurt the other day. It was like 4 days beyond the use by, not the sell by, the use by date. I had it anyway. And you know what? It was anyway?
Put it down. That's horrifying.
I because it dried. I don't want to. The worst was we found a pack of bacon that was past the use by date, and I wanted to use it. And
I'm kidding.
I threw it away.
Salmonella or something.
I can't. You know what? I cook stuff all the time for my family. I don't tell them it's expired. I just cook it. Here it is, kids. Eat it up.
You know, this is a really good time. A little you need indigestion. To go to an emergency room with the bacteria.
Yeah, I know. Right. Poisoning. The only problem is we have so much cheese. Cheese lasts forever. You just cut off if there's any part that get the hard cheeses. If it gets moldy, you cut it off. Keep on eating. I can't eat enough cheese. But here's the big difference. I am now like running every other day, or sometimes a couple days in a row. And that's been my help, because now the gym is, as you know, sadly, my gym is closed. And I tried to use that gym in the lobby till the very, very, very end. And it was great, because at the end, there was nobody at the gym, and I just sweat all over all that equipment.
Yeah, but there's no Peloton.
I know.
Are you going to get a Peloton?
No, I'm not getting a Peloton. No, the running. So I'm back on the Under Armour app. That has you. I forget what it's called now. I'm blanking out.
How on earth would I know what it is? How on earth would I know what it is?
What do you use?
Nike Run Club.
Oh, okay. So anyway, that's what's been going on. And you see a lot of people out on the street. I mean, on the roads and on the sidewalks. But everyone's keeping their distance. And you don't need to run.
You can just eat eggs. Just eat eggs at lunch. That's all you need to do. You'll be fine.
Not with my cholesterol numbers. I've managed to get to the doctor for my checkup for one last time before this whole thing broke loose, and just a minor upticks, nothing too serious. So that's why I'm back to, I was able to skip a whole, I was good for a week prior to the blood test, so I can game the system.
Wait, so you were good for a week and it was still slight upticks?
Oh yeah.
So
what's happening for real? I don't know. Okay. So what else is going on? JVL, how are you doing?
Here's a serious question. On a scale of this is just another ordinary day, mm-hmm. should be a one, mm-hmm. to this is 1929, which is a 10. Mm-hmm. Where are you boys?
Mentally today, as in Saturday night?
Or just in general?
Four.
Really?
Yeah.
Sunny?
I would say 7 to 8.
Yeah.
Somewhere in that range.
JVL, you're about 11.
53. I mean, just as a for instance, so I've written about this a bunch. Mm-hmm. What people often don't appreciate is the cascade effect, right? You know, like the cascades begin, you see one little piece of the system breaking and people can't extrapolate out to what else breaks. So for instance, I was talking with my brother-in-law today about the cruise industry.
Oh,
how is the cruise industry going to recover from this? Right? Because the people who take cruises tend to be quite mm-hmm. old. A bunch of them are going to die, and the ones who don't die are going to be really freaked out for a long time. A cruise ship is a very large piece of capital. You don't buy the ship all at once if you're the cruise line, right? You know, this is deferred out. There are loans upon loans upon loans, right? So the cruise industry itself is in a great deal of trouble. That's like part one of the cascade, right? Part two, you're a place like National Review, which makes a lot of money from cruises. Like all of a sudden you're going to have a gaping hole in your annual revenue picture because that whole part of revenue has just gone for good for you, right? But stepping like five steps further down, right? So everybody is insured, right? At the very high levels of finance, people purchase insurance on all sorts of things. And insurance companies themselves have what is called reinsurance. Right. There's a whole hidden universe of the industry called reinsurance, which is typically it's like Lloyd's and one or two other very large companies that nobody's ever heard of who insure the insurers. It is unclear to me how any reinsurer could be backstopped enough to cover all of what they are going to owe from something like this, because this is the economic equivalent of a meteor strike.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, like you just have whole sectors of the world, which we don't even see, which are simply going to tip over.
Well, let me just talk about this from the perspective of the movie business, because here's what's fascinating to me. I've been watching, like JVL, I've been watching this, but from a slightly different perspective, because I have been watching all of the business news out of China for the last 4 months, essentially watching as theaters shut down, watching as production shut down, watching as basically everything in China related to movies shuts down. And all of this was happening, there was some question as to whether or not, okay, maybe it is just China. Maybe this is like a SARS thing again, right? Maybe it will be different it will be different here, but it has been very much the same here. And it is, has led to all sorts of weird, and terrible problems. Like for instance, South by Southwest. South by Southwest is a big, big festival, right? South by Southwest essentially sustains the economy of Austin, Texas. Mm-hmm. For the year. This is like people plan their like annual yearly budgets around it, having the people come to the hotels, having people come to the restaurants, having people rent out the venues, et cetera, et cetera. And not only is the cancellation of South by Southwest bad for all of those people, for all the obvious reasons, you don't have the people coming in, you don't have, you know, the service economy takes a huge hit. South by Southwest itself was not insured for disease. I was insured for other things, but it was not insured for disease. And as a result, the festival, which essentially pays for each next year with the money it makes that year, right? Like, so they make the money in 2020, and that basically pays for all of the stuff in 2021. They have no idea how they're going to pay for any of that stuff. They've laid off half of the, you know, 150 people who work there on an annual basis. They're probably going to lay off the rest. There's a very real chance that South by Southwest does not happen next year. I would say there's a very real chance that South by Southwest never happens again. Maybe not like one. I don't think it's a 100% chance. I don't even think it's a 50% chance, but I would say there's a 20% chance South by Southwest just doesn't happen again, because in part because people, in part because they don't have the money, but also in further part because people just decide, like, do we really need to send a bunch of people to South by Southwest every year? Like, is that a thing that actually gets us a lot?
And you can't plan for catastrophic. So if you're a business in Austin, right, you can say, we think South by Southwest is overvalued and that over the course of the next 10 years, it's going to die as a festival. And you can plan for that. You cannot plan for South by Southwest is going to disappear this year and never come back.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this is.
Yeah. So anyway, it's bad. I, again, just from the perspective of the movie business, Christopher Nolan had a piece in the Washington Post that was edited by my friend Alyssa Rosenberg. She edited Christopher Nolan.
That's so awesome.
Did it require a lot of editing?
Well, he actually wrote it backwards.
Yeah, it was structured like a nesting doll. But he is obviously very big into movie theaters and the theatrical experience. And, you know, he gets away with making a $200 million movie like Tenet because you get people to go to see it in IMAX. You get people to go see it in Dolby Atmos. You get people to go see it in the theaters. But he's also, you know, committed to the idea of theaters as a place of community. And that's what this piece was about. And like, if you look at what is going to happen to movie theaters across the country, many of them are going to go out of business. Some of them will merge with others. We're going to see a very sharp reduction in the screen stock, you know, the number of screens in the country will just shrink. That's just what's going to happen.
Here's a question for you, Sonny, because you know more about this than I do. So in a strange way, the big players, Regal, AMC, they have incredibly small reserves, right? The total market cap of AMC is like, what, $275 million or something?
Yeah, I looked at it last week. It was $270 million. I have no idea what it is now.
So they may very well simply go out of business, disappear tomorrow. But somebody could go in and buy their business and stand it back up in a restructured way, which allows them to blah, 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 blah. But for an exhibitor like the Alamo Cinema Drafthouse, which many people, including me, thought of as the future of the theatrical experience, When they go out of business, and I suspect they will go out of business too, because they are incredibly small, there is nobody who would step in and pick that up, right? It's a small, it isn't, it's a boutique thing. It's really restaurants. It's not, it just goes away. All of these things are going to go away. Like, this is Dust Bowl days. People don't understand
how restaurants, bad this is. You know, if we're all stuck here for 18 months.
Yeah. It was funny. Beth and I got, you know, those
no
like
way. People are just going to say, forget about it. Go ahead.
You know, those Valpak like coupon things,
sure.
Right? We got one today, and it had a coupon in it, the grand opening of the Asian buffet. And I showed the coupon to Beth, and I was like, that's bad timing. That place is not gonna ever open or reopen, or it's gone forever.
I drove past today, the Hibachi Grill.
Oh, the Hibachi
Grill. What was it called? Yokohama? Hibachi. I think, but it had a different name. Hokkaido Grill.
Hokkaido. They used to be called Hokkaido, and they called it. Yeah, they changed the name.
I'm assuming. I bet they're open because they don't care.
Yeah. So here is my theory, and I am interested in to see what you guys think about this. Do you guys remember Ron Johnson, the senator from Wisconsin, who got dragged and dunked on the other day for saying, like, look, you got to keep this in perspective. It's like, you know, 3.5% of the population to die. Do you remember this? Like, everyone's like, wow, how stupid. And he was like, look, you know, life's full of risk. We know, you know, 37,000 people die every year driving on the highways. We don't tell people they can't drive cars, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And people started dunking on him by doing math and saying, yeah, but you know, like 3.5% of 300 million people is a lot more than 37,000 and yada, yada, yada. I actually think he is ahead of the curve here, and that his view is the view from the future. That once we get deep into spring and into July, and people understand exactly what the consequences of a total national lockdown are,
they're going to come out.
Well, the response may
spread it.
We're doing all of this to protect the old people. Well, you know what? The old people are on their own.
Boomer remover, as the kids
call
it.
I think there are. There's already a movement that is kind of pushing back on that, looking at the math and showing that flattening the curve just extends.
Yes.
This is the thing, right, JBL, that if you flatten the curve, what you end up doing is just extending the misery for 18 months instead of having a million people die at once.
But is it more of a minor, long-drawn-out misery?
Die. So you have fewer people total die,
but economic suicide
costs go up, right?
Yeah, that's right.
The reason you flatten the curve is because you can avoid many of those deaths, because the deaths become preventable deaths due to constraints of resources.
There's two
the
things.
The problem is it costs more.
That's right.
Well, I've seen a second argument that when you flatten the curve, if it still goes on long enough, you basically run at 100% ICU capacity for 18 months.
Yeah.
So like anybody, so you still end up losing most of those people anyway. You just lose them over a longer period of time, as opposed to kind of in the first like 2 months.
But the other problem with this view is that our society is not structured to be able to simply lose people over the age of 60. Like, for instance, most of Congress is over the age of 60.
Yeah.
The president will be over the age of 60. Everywhere you go, the leadership class is old people. And so, you know, the CEOs, the board members, how is that supposed to work? Because in a pandemic, do these people just live in Elysium, right? Do they have to all go up to the International Space Station with John Hurt? Like, what?
Those are two different.
Vic, you're on video. I'm waiting for you to give me the.
I know. Hello. What is not Clarice? I forget her name.
No, it's not.
That's not Clarice. Same woman. No, I mean, the two things here. One, I was talking to a friend of mine, and he was losing his mind up there in Boston about, the idea that, imagine if you were sick, right? You were sick, you had it, and you're over it. Right? Because people recover from this, right? Not everybody dies. And the people who recover from it, now they have it in there, right? They have it built in. They have the antibodies. It's in them now. And you are being told you still cannot go out and get other people sick. And there are other people who may be asymptomatic and they don't know it. And they're told they can't go out because you might get people sick. And then there are other people who are afraid of just getting, you know, don't go out. You might catch it and get sick. You might catch it and get symptoms that you don't know you have, but you'll feel fine. that's the problem, I think, is telling all these people that they feel, because they feel completely normal. They feel completely fine, and yet you're confined, not allowed to get closer than 6 feet to other people, and everything around you is shutting down, and it's, like I said before, economic suicide. That's the problem. And I think after, forget about the summer, I think after 2 weeks of this, people are going to start coming out like, I don't care. And then what are you going to do? Call the National Guard? I guess it's happening in California. You know,
I was, the National Guard, for sure. We are days, if not weeks, away from National Guard being out and travel restrictions and the whole nine yards. I would be shocked if we don't get to that. I was texting back and forth with our buddy J-Pod and going through like, so we were essentially casting the COVID-19 pandemic as the stand. You know, I like to think that I'm Stu Redmond, and it's pretty obvious who Randall Flagg is and all this. And John was like, well, who am I? And I said, obviously your mother, Abigail. We're all going to come and rally to you, John, and you are going to be the one who leads us.
I'm corpse number 739,367. That's me.
Don't they, when do they end up in Vegas? They go to Nevada, don't they?
They go to Iowa.
They go to Iowa and then they go to Colorado.
Right. Yeah. Colorado. And then he goes, Randall Flagg and the trash can man, and everybody goes down to, and Laura, what's her name? Laura San Giacomo. Right.
Ooh, yeah.
They go to Vegas.
Can we take a quick break while I refill my drink?
See, that's the beauty of this. Yeah. So long as we're quiet.
Just pause. All right. 3209.
Hey, Vic, if you need to, you can go pee.
I'm fine. No, I'm fine. I'm fine. Yeah, you know what the good thing is? The good thing is I don't actually drink at home unless it's for social reasons. Like if I'm at home. So I'm like, there are people who tell me, there are people on Twitter.
I'm actually going to go pee. Hold on. Save
okay,
for the
show. Okay, good. Yeah.
I'm back.
Wow, that was quick. You didn't even tell us what you were drinking.
I'm drinking should I wait till...
Okay, sure. Hey, so like I drank yesterday and then I drank the night before. You know why? My phone rings at 9:30 at night and it's Continetti. And I said, uh-oh, like, is everything okay? You know, what's wrong? Mm-hmm. Like, why would he call? And at that hour, or was it something about his op-ed column? Like he needed something fixed for his column for us.
Yeah.
No, he just finished off a bottle of Knob Creek, and he was in very good spirits. I just wanted to chat, so we chatted for like 30 minutes, and I had him in stitches.
That's great. Good for him.
Yeah. Drunk Matt is so funny because every joke I'm hitting out of the park.
We should do a lunch with you and me. He said, John and Matt.
You know what? He was very funny. He said, "I said, why don't we do one of these Zoom things?" I said, "We're doing one with the Beacon folks, you know, the next day." And he said, "The problem is when we're with a big group, we always have to break away in individual conversations. What are we going to do? Like, oh, you and I have left this conversation.
Hop on to text.
Hop on to text
each other.
3209. Okay, ready? Good. Sonny, you came back. What are you? You didn't even tell us what you're drinking.
I am drinking Old Forester, the 100 proof. Hey. That is what I like. That's what I like to drink.
Good.
Did you mix it with club soda?
I mixed it with ice.
Coke.
I put a spherical ice cube in there.
One of your spherical ice cubes. Very nice. Very nice.
Well, hold that up.
It's split apart now. It split in half, but. Yeah.
Very nice.
Did you want to continue on this wonderful, uplifting, cheerful?
Yeah, this is really.
You guys pulled out all of your retirement money and turned it into gold and buried it in the backyard.
No, I just lit it on fire.
Bitcoin. I thought, well, how about Bitcoin? Does that work? Yeah.
Either gold or canned goods and ammunition.
That's right. The person who is in most has the most financial security right now is William Devane.
William Devane and Stephen Gutowski.
Okay, good. So we're good on this. Can we move onward? Over the weekend.
We're gonna do a box office update.
On a Saturday night. We should be getting. Are there Saturday numbers?
Let's look at the daily numbers.
Okay. I was gonna mention last weekend, if I can.
Please
go ahead.
Because we skipped it. Over the weekend, Onward remained at the top of the box office with a massive $10.6 million, followed by Bloodshot with $9.2 million. And in third place was I Still Believe with $9.1 million. That is a mega box office.
Let me just tell you what the latest dailies are. So I just pulled up boxofficemojo.com for whatever reason. It's the easiest one to type in. And here are the latest dailies from Thursday, March 19th. Onward, number one, with $33,000.
Per screen.
Per screen?
No, that's total. That's all the screens put together. The Invisible Man.
How many screens it's on?
The Invisible Man, $21,800 in the whole country is how much it grossed. Bloodshot, 18th. I mean, these are numbers that you see per screen averages for on like relatively big releases, not even the huge releases, not even like Avengers Infinity War, you know, $33,000. That's like a good opening weekend. That's an opening weekend that gets you at about $100 million, you know,
does that mean that there are still theaters open?
There are a handful. There are a bunch of drive-ins.
Right,
the drive-ins. The drive-ins have actually had a bit of a resurgence because, although I have to say, I don't quite understand the drive-in phenomenon because you still have to have those like speakers in your car, right? You like hook them up to your window. Aren't people touching those?
Isn't that from the olden days? When I was a kid, we went to drive-ins a couple times, and I remember you just had to tune into a particular station, and then you're on your radio. In the olden days, like whatever it is, AM or whatever, some weird band. Really? Yeah. How we watched Rocky. We watched Rocky in the drive-in back in the day. Anyway.
That's pretty awesome. Which one?
The first one. Yeah, the first one. And another movie, this one was more of a Mattis family movie called Hiss. And it was about snakes attacking people. And the last snake was like a mechanical one. It was like a robot snake, that I think. Robot snake. Robot snake, very dangerous. Huh. Yeah.
Is this a Japanese movie?
No. American movie. I remember they did one scene where the only thing left you saw was like the shoe. Oh, and then like the snake finishing, like the snake ate the whole body, you know? This is before Blood Orchid. What is it? Anaconda. This is before Anaconda. Yeah, that's my thought on drive-ins. But what is happening here? Box office, more box office.
I think it's the quality of the movies.
Yeah, that's
that we just said. These are literally the three worst movies ever to be released, and audiences have just stayed away.
Yes, Bloodshot is something. Now, what is I Still Believe? What is that?
Boy, Vin Diesel couldn't happen to a nicer guy, right, Sonny?
I don't know. I don't know anything about Vin Diesel. I Still Believe it's some Christian movie. I don't know. I mean, what's interesting, I mean, the real story here, of course, is what we're going to talk about in a minute, which is that the studios, Universal, took the first step, and basically everybody else is following. The studios have said that the theatrical exclusivity window no longer exists for the duration of this crisis for titles that we deem it not to exist for. So basically the way the movie business works, right, for these movies that come out on 3,000 screens is you get essentially a 74-day exclusive window. At 74 days or so, it usually shows up on VOD. And then at 90 days, it's available for home purchase. That's not how it works for every movie, but that is like the kind of bare minimum is 74 days and 90 days. And Universal and Blumhouse Pictures, they said, no, we're not doing that for The Invisible Man and The Hunt. We are putting it straight onto VOD. We have spent a ton of money advertising these movies. They are not going to be playing in theaters. The theaters are all closed, so we are going to put them on VOD at a price point of $20 per movie, which is, it depends on how you want to look at it. You could say that's either extremely reasonable to see a movie that is in theaters at home, or you could say, no, that's unreasonable. I'm watching at home. I should pay $6 like I pay for every other movie. We could talk about that in a minute. But every other studio basically followed suit. Bloodshot is now, it will be available on Tuesday, I think. Onward, I think, is on Disney Plus already. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, I just saw a thing about it. It's coming up soon.
I saw it for rent somewhere today on Vudu, I think.
Yeah, it's either available for rent, or it's either available for rent now and will be on Disney Plus in 2 weeks, or it's available on Disney Plus already. I'm not 100% sure. Again, but essentially every movie that was in theaters, the way back, the Ben Affleck basketball movie that is now available for rent. And they have kind of stuck with this $20 price point, which I think the interesting thing will be to see which studio decides that is too high and decides to go $10, and then they just start undercutting each other down to back at the $6 point.
Because it's a rental, not a purchase.
Because it's a rental, not a purchase.
You could get away with it if you told people they were purchasing it for $20.
Yeah. Yes, I think you could, but they don't. That's, again, there's an argument to be made that, like, look, if you have four people in a house and you're all watching The Hunt, you would have paid $60 to see that at a theater in New York City. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if you were all watching The Hunt,
you'd have paid 80 to see that in a theater in New York City.
Whatever. But the point is, I'm agreeing with you.
Even at $20 at home, it is not an unreasonable price point.
So anyway, the big question is whether or not this is the end of the theatrical exclusivity window, or if it is just, if this situation is so weird and so volatile that things will go back to normal. I don't know. I honestly am not 100% sure. I think the big question will be, I'm stepping on my own question here, but I think the big question will be what Disney does with Black Widow. Because if Disney decides that Black Widow is too, they would lose too much money by putting it on VOD, even at a higher price point, even at like $40, let's say, then everybody might be able to just say, this is a one-time thing. We're not going to, but I don't know if that will hold. I don't know. What do you guys
think? So somewhere in Disney, somebody has been doing all of the back of the envelope calculations on whether it is worth turning their theatrical releases into VOD or just putting them onto Disney Plus, which is what they did with Frozen 2, right? So they accelerated the Frozen 2 move to Disney Plus. I imagine that the numbers they see from that and the surge in Disney Plus subscriptions will help drive their thinking on what they do with Black Widow and Mulan. Mm-hmm. Disagree? Yeah.
I think that is basically, sorry, I'm just looking up right now when Onward is coming to Disney Plus. Hold on. I think that's exactly right. I mean, like, Onward is a weird one because it had already been in theaters for a couple of weeks. Mulan will be a weird one because I don't know how many people, are going to be like, I have to watch Mulan now. Instead of waiting, you know, 2 months for it to be on Disney Plus, right?
Well, but all the people who have been forced to watch Frozen 2 97 times by their children in the previous 3 weeks will be ready to pay anything to put a different stupid Disney movie on for their kids.
Yeah. But the real question is what happens with Black Widow, right? Because Black Widow is a big event movie. It is a MCU movie. Everybody wants to see what happens in these movies, and they want to see what happens like now. They don't want to be spoiled. They don't want to, you know.
Two questions for you. One, is the filming already done completely for Black Widow? They didn't have to stop anything. They're ready to go.
It was coming out in May.
It
was scheduled to come out in May. They've pushed back the release date.
When does it take place?
It's not 100% clear to me. My understanding is that it is a prequel of sorts.
It would have to be, right?
And like basically Captain Marvel style, like which Captain Marvel takes place in the 90s. Yeah, I think it would. Right.
Okay. Well, it happens, same thing with her because, I mean, she can't be, but she's not that old, obviously. So it may be the early aughts or something. I don't know. And what about Wonder Woman?
Well, so Warner Brothers there were rumors that Warner Brothers was going to put Wonder Woman straight on the HBO Max platform that they are going to be debuting soon. They very harshly shot down those rumors. They said, no, we're still a theatrical release. We're not doing VOD. We're not doing HBO Max. This is a theatrical movie.
So when the next weekend box,
you know, Warner Brothers has a movie just sitting there that they could put out onto their HBO Max. It's got superheroes and everything.
What movie is that, Sonny?
It's the Snyder Cut of Justice League. Get it on there, Warner. What are you doing?
There's no better time than now. So what are we talking about the next time we see Box Office Mojo, the weekend box office, when I check it on Monday? What is that going to look like, those numbers?
like $100,000. How many total?
That is so insane. Yeah, that number is going to be so small. I'm going to need my glasses. Speaking of which, Warby Parker is committed to providing exceptional vision care online and in stores, offering eyeglasses, sunglasses, eye exams, and contact lenses. Glasses start at $95, including prescription lenses, sunglasses, progressives, and blue light lenses also available. Also, for every pair of glasses sold, Warby Parker distributes a pair of glasses to someone in need. Almost a billion people worldwide lack access to glasses. This means that 15% of the global population cannot effectively learn or work, which is crazy because glasses were invented 700 years ago. Warby Parker partners with nonprofits like VisionSpring to ensure that for every pair of glasses sold, a pair is distributed to someone in need. I took the online quiz, ordered a home try-on kit, and got a selection of glasses to try on. And believe me, I was skeptical because I didn't think any glasses would fit my head. And look, they practically do. You can see it on the video here on Squadcast. Please don't comment in the middle of my ad read. Warby Parker styles range from extra narrow to extra wide. That would be me. To fit all face shapes, I selected the Eaton, which is a lovely tortoise shell frame. And I'm telling you, they still fit my head 2 years later. They don't slide off. And the lenses still have no scratches. That's the truth. Again, the home try-on program is a piece of cake. My family helped me decide which glasses to choose. If you have an iPhone X, you can also download Warby Parker's app where you can use their brand new virtual try-on, allowing you to try on eyeglasses, seeing the realistic color, texture, and size of each style using just your phone. Try Warby Parker's free home try-on program. Order 5 pairs of glasses to try at home for free for 5 days. There's no obligation to buy. Ships free and includes a prepaid return shipping label. Try 5 pairs of glasses at home for free at warbyparker.com/substandard. There's probably no better time to try these things at home than now. So there you go.
Hey guys, it's JVL here. We had recorded a full show and it was great. And for some reason, the
million times better than whatever crap you're about to get.
Yeah, the recording then stopped right after our read of our sponsor. And now we're trying to figure out what to do. And do we really want to talk about The Hunt all over again?
We're all learning.
We're going to do it for the people. For you.
I hope you appreciate that. People, we don't have anything better to do. The good news is
Vic is now drinking alcohol.
The show that we don't get paid for anymore. We're going to do it again
nothing.
For you.
Nothing out of this.
All right. It's the big boy review of The Hunt. So The Hunt is the most controversial movie that nobody has ever seen, right? This was a big thing, right? That when it was about to come out, there was a big shooting. I can't remember if it was a school shooting or a concert shooting. Who knows? There's so many shootings in America. But some of the liberal critics, progressive-minded folks were like, is this the movie we really need right now? And then Donald Trump got into the act and kind of subtweeted the movie. He said, you know, I can't believe there's a movie coming out where the elites hunt the deplorables for sport. It's so disgusting. Liberal Hollywood, blah, blah, blah. And so Universal blinked and pulled the movie from its schedule. And as a result, it was rescheduled about 6 weeks ago, I want to say, maybe 4 or 6 weeks ago, something like that, for 2 weekends ago. Not this last weekend, but the weekend before that. And as a result, they rescheduled it right in the middle of the coronavirus crisis. So the movie was in theaters for about a week.
It's very unlucky.
10 days, grossed about $7 million all told. And now has been dumped on to VOD. You can watch it on Amazon. I believe JVL and Vic both watched it via Amazon. The movie itself is, I will say that it is one of the big self-owns of the conservative movement in recent years to have fought to get this movie pulled from the schedule, because it is exactly as the premise makes it sound. It's about a group of liberal elites hunting deplorable redneck types. And the liberal elites are very much the bad guys, and most of the humor comes at their expense, though. There is very much a both sides mentality to this. It's a movie about the kind of awfulness of the extremes and the ridiculousness of the world in which we live. And I had a pretty good time watching it. I'm not going to lie. It's got this kind of over the top violent aesthetic that is very appealing to the 8-year-old boy in me. And it has a kind of searing condemnation of everybody who does all of the silliness on social media, which has a very strong appeal to the 37-year-old in me. I will say that the movie is at its best when it's most specific. When it's landing specific jabs at each of the sides. I'll just use two quick examples here. The first is there's a moment when the liberal elites are all kind of in a bunker and they're talking about, they're basically in between kills. They're in between huntings of humans. And one of them kind of squeals with glee and he's like, "Ooh, Ava DuVernay liked one of my posts." And it just made me guffaw with laughter in the theater. And kind of on the other side of things, there's a moment where one of the redneck characters is like, he comes across a series of, he comes across a group of refugees who are trying to flee. And he's like, no, these are crisis actors. This is totally ridiculous. It's fine. They're crisis actors. And the, one of the characters who's played by Betty Gilpin, who is like kind of caught in the middle of all this, she's like, no, but there's a baby there. You know, why would they bring? And the guy's like, of course, crisis actors have crisis babies. That makes total sense. And the line, which is uttered by Ethan Suplee, who most of us will remember from Mallrats and also My Name is Earl. The way he says crisis babies just, again, made me like guffaw and laughter, the absurdity of it all. So I like the movie quite a bit. It's disappointing that this has turned into such a object of passion and hatred on both sides. I liked it. What about you, JVL? What did you think?
Oh, for goodness sake, JVL, what are you showing us there on your phone?
I loved it. I loved it. I thought it was great. And I thought it was one of the, it is the political satire we need at this moment. Do you not agree? I mean, so here you have to delve a little bit into the plot. What happens is a bunch of deplorables get drugged. They wake up on a manor farm somewhere. It turns out to be like Croatia or something. And they are placed in the middle of essentially a shooting war between themselves and a bunch of like the worst sort of progressive busybody hater types. And the protagonist, played by Betty Gilpin, her character's name is Snowball, it turns out does not belong there. She has been brought there because she has the same name as somebody else who wronged these elites. And she proceeds to kill all of them. She kills one or two of the people who are supposedly the deplorables. She kills a bunch of the people who are the elites. And she is the stand-in for anybody who feels like they have woken up after being drugged in an American culture war, which they have no interest in and no desire to be in and feels like a foreign country anyway. And it is, I joked, I will recycle my joke because I was proud of it from the lost taping. The elevator pitch for this is Die Hard for David Brooks. So anybody who has really always wished for a militant middle to just say, like, forget it, stop the culture war, I want to get off. That's what this is for. And it fulfills all of our fantasies about seeing both the racist, redneck, idiot conspiracy theorists and the horrible progressive control freaks and, just sort of vile human beings all killed in the most gruesome and wonderful ways. I love
Vic. Give us a run through the quadrants.
I'm just going to give you a quick run through the quadrants. First of all, duration is an hour and a half, which is great. Plot, very understandable. A little surprising. Again, I thought it was going to be more clear cut, but I didn't realize it was a both sides kind of a movie, but it was still very amusing. The violence is out of control. And there is a lot of
cartoonish.
Violence.
No, I mean, isn't it kind much of, more like Kill Bill?
There's a lot of Kill Bill.
There's a moment when a woman is blown in half. And she lands in a pit of spikes.
Oh, that was very funny.
And she's like, put me out of my misery. And one of the guys is like, no. And she goes, oh, you snowflake. And then blows her own head off.
Right.
And
again, she got impaled twice. She got
one of these very like specific moments of humor in the thing that I liked.
That was ridiculous, but very entertaining. And Betty Gilpin is great. I gave it an A.
Well, you know, you talk, Sonny, you talk about specificity. The idea that the elites who are trying to set up like a little fake corner general store in what they think of as the most redneck place in the world, when the deplorables show up and ask, what state are we in? And they say, oh, Arkansas. Which again is so perfectly, of course,
that's what the same people
who loved Bill Clinton 20 years ago would think that the most redneck place in the world is Arkansas.
Yeah. And there was
everything about it was just great.
There's another very good and very specific moment in the movie that they actually explained, but that I just want to highlight here, which is because I realized this as I was watching it before it happened in the movie. But there's a moment where Betty Gilpin's character orders a pack of smokes. She orders a pack of cigarettes. And the cashiers ring it up and they give it to her and they give her $10 in change. And I was like, I've just driven through Arkansas. Let me tell you, a pack of smokes don't cost $10 in Arkansas. That is not a $10 purchase in Arkansas. That is a $6 purchase or a $7 purchase in Arkansas.
And that's what tips her off.
And that's what tips. Well, yeah. But she already knows something is wrong. She's aware. I like this movie a lot, and I like it for a lot of the reasons that the kind of progressive critics of America hate this movie, which is that it is a movie about both sides. It is a movie about both sides being terrible, that both sides have their own specific flaws and their own awfulness, and they're both contributing to the
conspiracy
degradation theories of discourse, let's say. There's a weird thing that has happened with critics in our modern times, and it has a lot to do with the current president, but it has broken them in a very real way, and the inability to appreciate this movie for what it is, which is very strictly a look at the ways in which the extremes of both sides have poisoned the discourse, and the inability to appreciate this movie on that level, it's like 30% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, is I think a real problem with like the way criticism works and with the sort of person who is attracted to it. And we didn't actually talk about this before, so I'm going to throw this as something a little bit new. Cool. For our current conversation.
Exciting. The midnight hour. Go for
but
it.
But when I look at this movie and I look at the way it was received, it drives home the fact that intellectual diversity is important and is as important in this sort of thing as any other sort of diversity. I do think that this movie suffers because it is being viewed entirely through a prism of people who are so disgusted with one side of the argument, one side of the political sphere, that they can't kind of have fun with both sides of it. And it's a weird little Rorschach test, I think. I don't know.
Vic, what overall grade did you give this movie?
I gave it an A. I thought it was very entertaining.
How did it do on the nudity quadrant?
Again, no, there was none. But Betty Gilpin's great. I liked her in, I first saw her in Glow. Yeah, I saw her in Glow, which we only watched the first season. But so I found it very entertaining. It's kind of Hunger Games-ish, you know, especially when they all have to reach in there and find different weapons, but they're not killing each other with the weapons, obviously.
Is she as good an actress as she seems in this? I've never seen her in anything before, but she's great in this.
Yeah, she's very good in Glow.
She's very good in Glow. Very good. Yeah, absolutely. I was a little disappointed, as I mentioned in the lost tapes, that I didn't get more Ike Barinholtz and Emma Roberts. And she's much older now.
I like that. I like the fact that they introduce all of these kind of name actors and then dispose of them quickly.
It was like Steven Seagal in Executive Decision.
Yeah.
You remember? I thought, oh my gosh, we're going to have a whole
Steven Seagal movie. I didn't realize this was a Steven Seagal movie.
Right. Oh, there he goes.
Turns out to be much better. It's a Kurt Russell movie.
I can't wait. It's like, oh my gosh, Mission Impossible with Emilio Estevez. This is going to be great. So anyway, that's it. Do you I feel like I have no more thoughts on the Haunt.
Sonny, here's a question. Sorry. Do you think this movie will find an audience?
100%. It is.
This should be a cult classic, shouldn't it?
Well, so there are two different ways to look at this. There is the simple fact of the matter that it is so specific to our moment, and that it relies on so much topical humor, that it could not. It may be one of these movies that like does not last because people are just, you know, taken out of what they're watching because they're like, what are they talking about? At the same time. I do think that there is enough cartoonish over the top violence for it to succeed as a, Roger Corman, John Carpenter style, kind of B exploitation picture.
Fair enough.
Yeah. The violence is great. Okay. Wow. That was short. See, that was painless.
Yeah. Sorry. We had more before, guys, but now we've got corrections and whatnot.
Don't check your Wi-Fi, Sonny. Okay.
I didn't check my Wi-Fi. I was looking up Onward, which reminds me, Onward is on VOD now. It's going to be on Disney Plus in 2 weeks. That's what the issue is.
And now we know. And I also mentioned, I think in the last tape, that this is basically a reboot of the Gilligan's Island episode called The Hunt. And that was where, Safari Hunter came in, and there was no game to hunt. He chose to hunt Gilligan, and he was with I don't know what his name was in Ramu, I think was his name, but it was the actor. It was a Japanese actor. He had a sidekick, the hunter, and he was the guy who played. Thank you, JVL. Where am I? Oh yes, so he was the same guy who played Oddjob in Goldfinger.
So that's how did he get off the island?
I don't remember, but all those people had like, oh, you know what? They probably just got on there. They always ended up getting on their boat and leaving. And for some reason, I don't know why the rest of the crew never just took their boat. The same thing with Harold Hecuba and the, you know, in the Gilligan's Island episode, the director played by Phil Silvers, he left too. Somebody should just go get him. Okay. I could talk about Gilligan's Island for a while.
I know you could. We could do a whole Gilligan's Island segment.
It is Harold Hecuba. Okay. Corrections and shout outs. JVL, again, finally, this book arrived, Revolution in
Thank
Time.
Thank you, Ryan.
From Ryan Shigel.
Wow, Ryan, we did a whole thing about you.
Premonition.
I'm sorry, but
how'd
it's
you
gone.
Read my mind?
Yeah.
Ryan Shinkel, listener, friend, who also came to the our talk at Georgetown, he sent you that book. I'll give it to you next year. Okay. That is all the time that we are giving to this episode. Questions, comments, complaints, compliments. Tweet us at Sonny Bunch, at Victorino Mattis.
At JV Last. He's back. He's back
he
on Twitter.
Kind of
everyone.
Is, I think. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. Just type in Subbeacon under podcasts, and we're there. Leave a review. Tell your friends. Until next time.
So this is a quick question. So that we don't have to recapitulate the whole. And should
I sure
we try
hope this
to
is
do, while things are terrible, should we try to do like one shorter episode each week too? Like, since now that we can do it at night and just to catch up with each other.
No.
Just 10 minutes.
I'm going to say no.
Vic has no interest in catching up.
I was hoping we were going to kill. I think coronavirus would finally kill the podcast. That's what I was hoping for.
Sonny, do you want to do just like you and me, like chatting about like what to watch?
Yeah, sure. Let's talk offline about it. Yeah, we'll figure out, you know, how we're going to do that.
I'm sure.
Nick, I'll keep showing you pictures on my phone while we tape.
Great. I'm sure it's fine.